Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Kimberly Atkins, Chief Washington Reporter at the Boston Herald, and this is On Point. President Trump's cabinet faced so much turmoil last week that Firing Friday trended on Twitter. Here's what the president said on Thursday.
There'll always be change, and I think you want to see change. And I want to also see different ideas.
The president says he's very close to having the team he wants now that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is out. Rumors swirl around the fate of National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos stumbles on 60 Minutes. The heads of HUD, the VA, and the EPA all mired in scandal. This hour, On Point, chaos reigns in Trump's troubled cabinet. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the staff shakeups in the White House? Should there always be change, as the president says? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter or Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Eliana Johnson, White House reporter for Politico. You can link to find her latest piece headlined Trump Gives McMaster the Tillerson Treatment at our website, onpointradio.org. Eliana Johnson, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Kim. Great to be with you.
Also with me from Washington is Juliette Eilperin, senior national affairs correspondent for The Washington Post. She covers how the administration is transforming policy and the government itself. You can find a link to her piece headlined Trump Cabinet Members Accused of Living Large at Taxpayers' Expense at our website, onpointradio.org. Juliette, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks so much.
And with me from Washington is Michael Warren, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. You can find a link to his White House Watch piece headlined, Is McMaster on His Way Out Too? At our website, onpointradio.org. Michael Warren, welcome back.
Hi, Ken. Great to be here.
So I want to get to all of the cabinet chaos soon. But first, let's start by the firing of FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, which happened Friday and which Trump tweeted about over the weekend. What can we expect the fallout from that to be, Michael?
Well, we'll just have to see. You know, this firing came as the result of a report from an internal investigation from the FBI, a recommendation by that those doing the investigation to fire McCabe. And it seems that there's reason to think that his firing was justified. But you add to the fact that the president himself, who has been sort of publicly taunting McCabe ever since he was named acting director of the FBI after the president fired James Comey from the position of director, all the way through this weekend where, you know, he essentially said, the president said on Twitter that that McCabe's McCabe has a problem, that he was a big problem with this Mueller investigation that shouldn't be happening anyway. And you have running up against what may be a justified firing with the circumstances surrounding it that suggest the president may have put pressure on the FBI, on the Department of Justice to do something about somebody that the president thought was a political problem for him. Apparently, McCabe is going to say his piece somewhere, and we'll just have to see what comes out of that.
And Eliana, talk about why the White House is so concerned about this. Aren't these sort of personnel decisions at the FBI supposed to be left up to the FBI? Why is President Trump getting so involved?
That's a great question. I think the White House's involvement is really muddying this issue. McCabe's firing was actually recommended by career officials at the Justice Department and within the FBI. And I think that's getting lost because the president, who knows that McCabe was involved in the FBI's Russia investigation and for a time was acting director of the FBI when it was investigating Trump and the Russia investigation, has been targeting him on Twitter for the past several months, suggesting that he's biased against the president, even though what he is accused of leaking and what the investigation concerns was actually that the FBI wanted to continue investigating Hillary Clinton and her ties to the Clinton Foundation and what the Clinton Foundation was doing against the advice of the Justice Department. So I think the president's involvement of this in his targeting of Andrew McCabe has made it seem like Andrew McCabe was fired at the direction of the president, even though it was actually at the direction, or Jeff Sessions took the advice of career officials within the Justice Department and the FBI.
And before we get into specific cabinet members, Juliet, just talk a little bit, give us an opener about the overall mood within the White House and the administration, given all of the shifting. How is it having an impact there?
Well, it has injected a note of uncertainty into the day-to-day operations of the White House itself and many of the departments across the government. Since clearly, you know, and having covered the White House for 4 years under Barack Obama, you know, there's always turnover in a White House, for example, but it's at such a rapid clip. And there's such uncertainty about whose job is safe and whose isn't, starting with the chief of staff on down, that it obviously makes it more complicated in terms of how folks operate, who they interact with. And then you expand out into the cabinet and the individual departments where you have a very similar phenomenon, where you have folks who just aren't quite sure whether people will be in the decision-making positions they are in right now, and that makes it harder to move forward and certainly complicates running the government.
Michael Warren, let's talk about some of the folks who are out. Last week, we saw the ouster of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. That was something that seemed to be in the making for quite some time. Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit how that went down and what the impact was.
I think you're absolutely right that I think going back to at least December and probably going even further back, the president had been thinking about it and talking about getting rid of Rex Tillerson. Personally, the two never really gelled. It kicked off poorly over a personnel decision. I think you can trace it back to about February of 2017. Rex Tillerson wanted to hire and have the president appoint Elliot Abrams as Deputy Secretary of State, a very important position at the State Department, really kind of runs the day-to-day operations, and had a good meeting in the White House, in the Oval Office, with President Trump, Elliot Abrams, and Rex Tillerson. And then sort of out of nowhere, the White House said that he Abrams was not up to snuff. He had been accused, I think, incorrectly of writing anti-Trump things during the campaign. And that was, I think, the start of a bad personal relationship. I don't think as well Rex Tillerson ever really had a good sense of what he was doing in the job. And then you add to all of that these kind of personal disputes, the claim that Rex Tillerson had called the president a moron behind the scenes came out. All of that, I think, contributed to the sense that this was not a man who was long for his position. And interestingly, I think there were several reports back in December that Rex Tillerson was on his way out, that Mike Pompeo, who now the president has decided he will nominate for the position, was going to be moved from the CIA and nominated for Secretary of State. And then nothing really happened for several months. I don't think those reports were necessarily incorrect at the time, but this is the sort of danger of covering the White House, this particular White House, I should say, which is that the president makes decisions and then takes a little while to act on them. He maybe isn't as much of the firer as he played one on TV on The Apprentice. He sort of doesn't like to make these decisions. His hand, I think, was ultimately forced here out of indication that he wanted to move forward on these potential North Korea talks mm-hmm. with a new Secretary of State.
And Eliana, look, we have seen presidents in the past not always on the exact same page with their secretaries of state. President Obama disagreed with Secretary of State John Kerry, often very publicly. What's different about the situation with President Trump and Rex Tillerson?
I think what began to happen with Donald Trump and Rex Tillerson was that Tillerson lost what really is the coin of the realm for the for any Secretary of State, which is that when he goes abroad, allies and adversaries have the impression that when he speaks for the President of the United States. And you could almost immediately see that wasn't the case with Rex Tillerson because he didn't speak for the president, and the president didn't speak for him. You had Rex Tillerson going out on Sunday shows in the wake of the Charlottesville controversy and saying, the president speaks for himself. I don't speak for him, and he doesn't speak for me. And then you had the president, when Rex Tillerson was traveling abroad, said he was open to talks with North Korea, coming out and tweeting that our great Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, is wasting his time trying to talk for North Korea. So I think from the very beginning, this was like, you know, trying to put a square peg in a round hole, that whole cliche. These guys, they didn't have personal chemistry. They weren't an ideological fit. You know, you hear the same thing with H.R. McMaster and the president, except for that while they don't have personal chemistry, they are a better ideological fit. And I think that's why that relationship has lasted a bit longer.
And Juliet, just very quickly in a couple seconds, how has this impacted morale at Foggy Bottom?
It's quite low with a lot of the career folks, particularly, you know, some of the most longest serving State Department officials who feel like they're under fire. It's fair to say that there are also some who have welcomed some of the reforms that Tillerson put in place. But what's interesting when you talk to folks there now is a lot of them had started to adjust to the way he was running the department, some of the changes. They felt like they were beginning to learn how to navigate new terrain. Mm-hmm. And now they face a new leader, a new approach, and certainly we'll have to see how that plays out going forward.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're talking about President Trump's cabinet, which has seen significant shakeups in the past 14 months of the president's term. You can join the conversation. Do you have concerns about Gina Haspel leading the CIA? What about the future of National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm talking with Eliana Johnson of Politico, Juliet Alperin of The Washington Post, and Michael Warren of The Weekly Standard. Now, I want to get to the intrigue over the future of H.R. McMaster, but first I want to get your thoughts on a Washington Post piece by Ruth Martin on reports that Donald Trump at least drafted non-disclosure agreements threatening $10 million in damages on the part of the federal government in an effort to keep people who work under him quiet even after they leave the White House. Juliet, what do you think that's all about?
Well, I think what's worth noting is that this is something that President Trump, when he was in the private sector, used repeatedly. He demanded these non-disclosure agreements. He required them of both folks who worked for the Trump Organization and folks who then worked on his campaign. And so For Donald Trump, non-disclosure agreements are nothing new. For the federal government, this is a highly unusual move, and that's why it's garnered so much attention from folks since the Washington Post reported this.
And that piece was by Ruth Marcus, of course, and you can find it, a link to it, on onpointradio.org. Now, let's turn to H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor. Michael, he has been rumored to be on the way out. President Trump is apparently looking for replacements. How is that affecting the move in the White House?
Well, folks in the White House and the National Security Council, very frustrated, angry. What they view in many ways what's happening in the media to H.R. McMaster the same way of what happened to Rex Tillerson over those several months between the first reports that he was on his way out and his eventual exit from the administration, which is it's not happening now. You had you've been hearing this now for several weeks, and really almost from the beginning of McMaster's tenure, going back to March of last year, that the two of them didn't get along. The president doesn't appreciate the way that McMaster, in his view, sort of talks down to the president, goes on for too long in his briefings. But the acrimony, I think, is real. The question is the timing. And the the problem with covering this White House is that you hear from folks who talk to the president, where the president seems to be ready to make a decision. He's going to get rid of H.R. McMaster. He's got somebody or a couple of people lined up, and then he doesn't pull the trigger. The question is, when is this going to happen? I think people are now feeling like it's closer than it was, that the president is really ready to do so. Mm. The question is when does he actually do it? People thought it might be as quickly as last Friday. That obviously hasn't happened. And people in the White House are sort of fretting over the unsure and unclear future for the National Security Advisor.
Eliana, you wrote that McMaster is getting Tillersoned. What did you mean by that? And might his close alliance with Defense Secretary Mattis help him survive a little longer?
Yeah, so I wrote that in the wake of several stories saying that McMaster was about to get fired. And my impression from talking to many people in the White House was that there was nothing new in the relationship between President Trump and the National Security Advisor, but that Trump actually made up his mind a long time ago that McMaster wasn't going to be a permanent fixture in the administration. What he hadn't made up his mind about was when exactly he was going to fire him. And I think the same was true about the Donald Trump and Rex Tillerson. So between the time that Rex Tillerson joined the administration and when he was actually fired, we had many rounds of stories about how he was on the verge of being fired. He was about to leave the administration, and it was, 14 months until he was actually fired. And I think we're going to go through the same several rounds of stories about McMaster until he's out of the news and the president will surprise everybody and he's actually dismissed. But what my story tried to convey was that leaves McMaster really in a state of limbo where he knows that he's not going to be around the administration forever, but he shows up to work every day and he's not sure whether this is the day he'll get fired or whether he could serve in the administration indefinitely. I think Rex Tillerson felt similarly. And it does, I think, add a layer of uncertainty, unease, external irritation because of the constant media inquiries to both McMaster and Tillerson as they went about their days trying to do pretty important jobs.
Mm. Kim, can I cut in very
yes,
quickly
please.
Just to say that I think it's an incorrect assumption that James Mattis, the defense secretary, and H.R. McMaster are in any way allies. In many ways, the National Security Council and the Defense Department have butted heads in this administration, and I don't know if that's a service issue. Mattis, of course, was a Marine general, and H.R. McMaster is an Army general, a three-star, four-star sort of situation, or just a turf war of some kind. But they are not allies, and I think that's an important thing to remember, because Mattis is somebody that, of all the cabinet members, of all the people in the administration, that the president at this point pretty much always listens to and respects his opinion.
Thanks for that point. David is calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi, David.
Hi, Kim. I just have a question regarding the firing of McCabe, and that is that since Trump over the weekend in his tweets tied that to the Mueller investigation with Jeff Sessions having recused himself, I'm not sure how that plays in terms of him firing McCabe. And additionally, the timing of it, I think, is very Trumpian in its vindictiveness. And so I wondered if someone could explain how Sessions was in a position to fire McCabe.
Juliet, can you give us a shot at that?
Well, yes. Just a couple of things. Obviously, as Attorney General, Jeff Sessions does have the power to fire someone like Andrew McCabe. I think one thing your caller is referring to is the fact is he was just shy. Mr. McCabe was just shy of serving enough time to get his full federal pension. And by firing him right before he was about to retire, earlier than he had anticipated, previously, it essentially deprives him of this pension. There seems to be negotiations going on. It's a little unclear how much of Mr. McCabe's pension he will be able to collect. The lawmaker has raised the prospect of even hiring him for a day so that somehow he'd fill out his federal service. But that certainly, there's no question that it was not lost on anyone that the timing of it was designed to exact a financial penalty of Mr. McCabe, who, again, is the subject of an IG report.
All right. Georgia is calling from Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Georgia, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kim. Just thinking, how things happen with President Trump is I think he gets the ones in and sees what they're like, and sees how far he can trust them. And then if they're not doing like with for We the People, I think then it's time he terminates them, But I think he gives it enough of a shot to see where they're going with it. And that's what it is. I think it's just like, how the saying, you have your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Okay. And that sort of turnaround has been the subject of not only news headlines, but also headlines in The Onion. The latest says from The Onion, Rick Perry apologizes for trying to outdo fellow cabinet members by using $72 million of taxpayer funds on a lampshade. That's funny, but it gets to something that we have seen a lot of, Juliet, lately, which are these sort of financial controversies of people living high on the taxpayer dollar. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I've been spending a lot of my time in recent months covering with my colleagues, some of the spending, the unusual spending that we've seen by this cabinet. And so, there are a range of agencies and cabinet members that fall under this category. For example, Scott Pruitt, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, has made the decision, along with his security staff, to travel first class or business class whenever possible. Documents that my colleague Brady Dennis and I obtained under the Freedom of Information Act showed that he had spent, for example, in one stretch over $100,000 on trips flying on private, military, or commercial airplanes, including a trip that involved a stopover in Rome for meetings that, most people would have considered optional for the EPA administrator. You have Ben Carson, who heads the Housing and Urban Development Department, who had a push for redecorating before he even entered office. According to a whistleblower, this was at the behest of his wife, and ultimately, while this whistleblower informed top HUD officials that she was not going to go ahead with some of this redecorating, eventually he bought a dining room table instead cost taxpayers over $31,000. So we're seeing the head of the Veterans Affairs Administration took a trip with his wife to Europe, attended a match at Wimbledon. So we're seeing it in multiple departments, and that's certainly something that's been at odds with the president's emphasis on, kind of draining the swamp and conserving taxpayer dollars.
Now, Michael, is it all just about these controversies, or are there situations where some of these cabinet members are making errors on the job, which may make it seem like they're in a little over their head?
Well, first to address the spending controversies, there are three. I'm told there are three cabinet members that have particularly rankled the president: Ben Carson, as Juliet mentioned, David Shulkin at the Veterans Affairs Department, and Ryan Zinke, one of his he's the Interior Secretary, spent $139,000 on door repairs at the department. The coverage, and it's important to remember, it's the media coverage that the president's paying attention to, and the media coverage is to President Trump undercutting that drain the swamp message. And that is what is really rankling the president and frustrating him and looking for ways to move on from those three. Scott Pruitt as well, although I don't sort of judging on the people we've talked to at the Weekly Standard, he's not in the same category as the other three I mentioned. And then of course there's always Jeff Sessions, who the president has wanted to get rid of, has been frustrated with, sort of blames all of the Mueller investigation woes that the president's suffered on Jeff Sessions' decision to recuse himself. That's another a member of the cabinet who, for other reasons, the president feels should go, but it hasn't again made any final decisions or has moved on that, at least not in recent months.
Another cabinet member who has been in the news lately is Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. During an interview that aired March 11th on CBS's 60 Minutes, Secretary DeVos spoke with Leslie Stahl about the state of schools in her home state.
Michigan schools need to do better. There is no doubt about it.
Have you seen the really bad schools? Maybe try to figure out what they're doing?
I have not intentionally visited schools that are underperforming.
Maybe you should.
Maybe I should. Yes.
Eliana, that was not the biggest, most shining moment for the education secretary. What lies ahead for her?
You know, this was a real snafu for Betsy DeVos, particularly because it happened on national television on 60 Minutes, which is a big show. That's something the president doesn't like. But it's an issue that happened and it ended, unlike the sort of drip, drip, drip that we've gotten from other cabinet secretaries, some of which we've discussed, Ben Carson at HUD, David Shulkin at the Department of Veterans Affairs, where there's been these continuing sagas. So I think Betsy DeVos for now is safe in her job simply because the White House has bigger fish to fry with the drama surrounding other cabinet secretaries, where the bad press is continuing and there is big fallout for these people who seem to be really abusing the trust of American taxpayers.
Some listener feedback, Jeremy Fugarino said on Facebook, if you people are really shocked when your head, then your head has been in the sand for decades. Find me one congressional politician that isn't wealthy. Find me one cabinet member, past or present, that isn't wealthy. Listener on Twitter says, I think all the turnover is bad for the administration and country. Some churn is understandable, but Trump is just going to run out of people who want the job. Michael, let's talk a little bit about Chief of Staff John Kelly. He has been recently trying to tamp down the idea that there is chaos in the White House in the cabinet. But is he himself also vulnerable to being fired by the president?
Well, he works in the Trump White House, so the answer to that question is yes. Anybody who works in particularly a high-profile position who isn't a family member is always, I think, at risk. But John Kelly in particular, his focus and his emphasis, his push to say that there's no chaos, I think has rankled, again, the president and the president's sensibilities, because Kelly has sort of positioned himself. He's made this pronouncements to this effect on television and in interviews that Kelly is the one who is taming things, who is trying to control things. Well, first of all, that's really not true. Kelly has stumbled. There was the Rob Porter controversy and Kelly's sort of inability to deal with it before it became public, to deal with the problem of Rob Porter, the accusations against Rob Porter, and the sort of broader security clearance issues. A lot of that that initial problem, and then the dealing with the public controversy, I think a lot of folks at the White House and the president himself view that as a John Kelly problem. But I think also the president takes umbrage at the fact that Kelly claims that he is the one who is sort of taming an out of control White House. The president sort of views that as the chief of staff getting out over his skis. Mm. Whether or not the chief of staff is in any real danger. Again, like with all of these White House staff members, it's just too difficult to say what the president's frustrations are that he expresses to friends and allies, and what is a real sense of I need to move, I need to make a change.
Juliet, in about 30 seconds, did Attorney General Jeff Sessions save his job by firing Andrew McCabe?
He got an extension. I think everyone would agree he got an extension. How long that extension will last is up in the air.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins, and we're talking about the latest twists and turns in President Trump's troubled cabinet. You can join the conversation. Are you concerned about Ben Carson's expensive taste in dining decor, Scott Pruitt and David Shulkin's travel? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm joined by Michael Warren of the Weekly Standard, Juliet Alperin of the Washington Post, and Eliana Johnson of Politico. So now I want to talk a little bit about some more people who might be coming in and what they may face in terms of confirmation. Senator Rand Paul, the Republican of Kentucky, was on Face the Nation yesterday, and he said what he would do anything he can to stop the president's pick for Secretary of State and CIA director.
You really want a diplomat to be in charge of the State Department, not someone who's advocating for war. So I can't vote for Pompeo. On Haspel, my main concern about her is that she oversaw an illegal black ops operation in Thailand that included torture. And I don't think torture is what America's about.
Eliana Johnson, will Gina Haspel face a tough time getting confirmed?
I do think that right now, though it's a little bit hard to tell, she will face an uphill battle. I think Rand Paul's doubling down on his commitment to vote against her, even after ProPublica, the news site, issued a report saying she oversaw the waterboarding of a terrorist detainee and then retracted that report. That was what prompted Rand Paul to say he was going to vote against her. But he said subsequent to that retraction that he was still committed to doing so. I think that really hurts her. But it's uncertain. I think she's gotten a lot of support from Democratic office holders at the CIA, like John Brennan. So I think it's possible that that she could get confirmed with quite a bit of Democratic support, though right now it's unclear.
Michael, what do you think? I mean, there was that retraction, that ProPublica retraction, but she still was overseeing some of these dark dark facilities during that post-11 period. Is there enough there for more lawmakers to launch an opposition?
Perhaps, but I think what Eliana mentioned about Democratic support is a real possibility, and somebody like John Brennan coming out to offer her his support for her may go a long way. Perhaps not on the far left of the Senate Democratic Conference, but it will go a long way. And part of that has to do with the fact that this is likely to be a very popular pick within the CIA. Just as Mike Pompeo, if he is confirmed as Secretary of State, will leave the CIA. With a legacy of being somewhat popular there at the agency, where in an administration where the president is not very popular at the CIA, Gina Haspel, his deputy, that pick that Pompeo made to pick her as his deputy was seen within the agency as a very friendly move as well, because it suggested that the administration and Pompeo in general would be supporting and defending defending the agency against accusations of bad acting and torture. But you know, you do have a Democratic sort of base that is very much against the idea of the CIA waterboarding, calling it torture. Dianne Feinstein, who had initially been supportive of this, getting some flack from her base, has sort of backed off a little bit of saying she would support Gina Haspel. So I agree with Eliana. It's an uphill battle.
Edith is on the line from Canton, Connecticut. Hi, Edith.
Hi, Kim.
Go ahead. You're on.
Okay. My concern is Pompeo. I think he's another yes man. And I think the president wants to surround himself, maybe all presidents, I don't know. But this president certainly wants to surround himself with people who agree with him, whether they do or not. I salute those who did not agree and stepped down before they were fired, maybe. But that's my concern.
Juliet, what do you think?
Well, I obviously, there are plenty of folks who share your listeners' view, but I think, as Eliana pointed out earlier, of all the cabinet positions, the State Department, the Secretary of State, is seen as speaking for the president on foreign policy, and there were so many instances where President Trump made it clear that he disagreed even after Secretary Tillerson would make a statement on North Korea, Iran, or other issues, that sort of disconnect is difficult to sustain over time. But it's absolutely true that CIA Director Pompeo has been effusive in his praise of President Trump over time and shares much more of his outlook when it comes to international affairs.
Christopher is on the line from Palm City, Florida. Welcome, Christopher.
Hi, Kim. Circling back to Rex Tillerson and our wonderful State Department, but first, when I heard Senator Paul's comments about needing career professional diplomats, I looked, first of all, I wish we had term limits for our wonderful career politicians as well as our diplomats. When we look at where the world is today and our foreign policy run by these so-called professional career diplomats, North Korea, Iran, the Middle East in general, just to mention a few. So I'm not concerned. And yes, we could deplore Trump's style and his delivery, but the substance behind it and the change that we're trying to he's trying to effect, I think, is great. And it's painful at times to watch him deliver it, but, you know, let's look at the substance and examine our career diplomats over the last 30, 40 years.
Michael, what do you think about that? What do you think about the idea of term limits for diplomats?
I don't know. I think that would I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. There's you know, Congress could do something about it if they wanted to. But I do think that the caller gets to a big part of the president's appeal. And this is something that is reflected at the State Department, which is this feeling that a lot of Americans have that there is a permanent bureaucracy in Washington that works against the interests of the people, or the way that the people vote, that the president has given voice to this, is calling it the deep state. But that being said, I have to agree with Senator Paul that there is some value in having career diplomats, maybe career diplomats who agree with the party in power, the president and the executive in power, of which there are quite a few. The problem with the Trump administration is that those Republicans, conservatives, type of people who might fill those positions, they either don't want to work in the Trump administration, or the Trump administration itself has weeded those folks out because they were insufficiently supportive during the Republican primary. That's been a big problem for the Trump administration, not just at the State Department, but at other agencies and departments, which is that the pool of career folks who actually may agree with the broad strokes of the Republican Party or the conservative movement simply just aren't available.
Eliana, what do you think about that? Is there a real trouble with brain trust when it comes to trying to find people to serve in this administration?
I think the White House problem is twofold. The constant headlines about chaos and churn, and the real fact that the president wants loyalty but doesn't necessarily return loyalty. You see that with Jeff Sessions, the attorney general in particular, who was the first senator to support the president, but then is mocked and derided by him very publicly on Twitter. That's one aspect of the difficulty this White House is having recruiting talent. But there's a second aspect, which is that the White House has continued to impose a very strict test on it, particularly in the realm of foreign policy, which is that it won't hire anybody who was critical of the president at all during the 2016 campaign. So at the same time that the White House is really working to bring people in, they're also keeping a big segment of people out. And so I think that really adds to the problem that they're having in recruiting people as they're dismissing a lot of people. You know, we're seeing lots of people leaving the administration and getting fired.
Well, one person coming into the administration is Larry Kudlow. He's coming in to replace economic advisor Gary Cohn. And on Wednesday, he told CNBC about the moment President Trump called him after the news of his appointment became public.
The president called and he said, it's out, because I don't think he was intending to put it out till tomorrow, Friday. And I said, oh, and he said, you're on the air. And he said, I'm looking at a picture of you. And he said, very handsome. So Trumpian.
Juliet, we know the president spends a lot of time watching cable news, commenting on how handsome his new pick is. Is this something like central casting out of a reality television show?
Sometimes it feels that way, and I think what's clear is that, again, the president is a huge consumer of cable news, and he pays attention to what people are saying about him on these shows. What's very interesting, we certainly saw this early on in the administration, that when staffers wanted to convey a message to the president, sometimes they would do it on a morning show, whether it's Fox and Friends or back in the day, Morning Joe, because they knew it was a way to get to the president. So it's the way sometimes staffers communicate to him. And now I think we can say the way future staffers communicate to him, because that is part of how he evaluates them when he decides who is going to serve in his White House.
All right, a couple comments from our website. Trump's troubled cabinet, LOL. Obama's cabinet gave 20% of America's uranium to Russia in exchange for a bribe to his Secretary of State, sent $1 billion in cash to Iran, and was spying on the Republican candidate using FISA warrants while lying to the FISA court about the Dem funding the dossier. Other comments. It's sad to see that FBI has become a platform for party politics. Comey and McCabe behaved very poorly, and they got fired for good reason. These critical state institutions should never be politicized, but that's not what we're witnessing. Michael, is there an overlooking of what has happened in past administrations here?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's all sorts of reasons to be skeptical of the way, and perhaps we should be, and we should have been more skeptical of the way the Obama administration operated. But I think that what we're dealing with now is, as we said at the beginning of the program, a group of ostensibly independent career DOJ officials, in the case of Andrew McCabe, making a recommendation that I think, if all the facts check out, should suggest that McCabe was in the wrong and maybe should have been fired. And it's the two-pronged problem of the timing of his firing just before he was supposed to get his pension, and the circumstances where President Trump has been so critical by name of McCabe that really undercut what ought to be or what could be a justified termination of his employment. So, as has been often the case with this administration, this is an own goal by President Trump and the White House.
Greg is calling from Waterloo, Iowa. Greg, what's on your mind?
Hi, Kim. This is about Rex Tillerson. And there are two numbers that were concerning to me. President Trump's base is about 35%. And the people who approved of going to war with Korea is about 35%. How do we stay out of war with this president?
Michael?
Well, I think that the president right now and the administration is arguing that they're trying to do just that by engaging in talks with the North Koreans. They've also emphasized that the bloody nose strategy that has been talked about so much, that that perhaps a preemptive strike on the North Koreans as a way to sort of, again, give them a bloody nose, that's not a policy of the administration, that is not their view of North Korea, but that something needed to change away from the Obama administration's policy of just sort of watching and waiting to see what happens. The fact of the matter is that it's not an easy situation. It's not an easy problem to fix. And in fact, President Obama said this to President Trump as they were exchanging, as the one was coming into office and the other was leaving, that this was going to be the most difficult problem that President Trump faced. War is, I think, something that not even the Trump administration is looking forward to and is looking for a way out of. Whether they'll be effective at that at talking with the North Koreans, that remains to be seen.
All right. Little Eagle is calling from Sarasota Springs, New York. Thanks for calling On Point.
Thank you. I left the reservation and I got qualified to be a truck driver 30 years ago. And I've been driving ever since. There's no job in America that you can just walk in without being qualified. This man, Trump, does not have the education, the character, or the skills to be president. You know, he wouldn't get a janitor's job in a brewery if he was sober all his life. Why don't they fire him on incompetence?
Eliana, talk about that.
Sure. I mean, I think the way people qualify for the presidency, people have typically brought similar backgrounds, which is coming up through American politics with service in Congress or in the governorship, is by running in an election before the American people. And it's the American people by voting in that election who decide whether they're qualified. And the American people decided Donald Trump was qualified. And when you talk about firing him, we have a process to do that in the House of Representatives called impeachment. That's a political process. And I think we'll see whether the Congress decides to do that. So we do have these processes in place. And I think that the American people and their representatives have delivered a verdict on it.
All right. Juliet Eilperin from The Washington Post, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Michael Warren from the Weekly Standard, we appreciate your time.
Thanks, Kim.
And Eliana Johnson from Politico, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast on our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, President Trump's opioid plan includes the death penalty for drug dealers. Will it solve the problem? And is it even constitutional? I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.